This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The technology was developed for the war on terror. It is a gadget that mimics a cell phone tower so that calls, texts, emails, and other data coming from cell phones goes through the device before it's sent on its way using the phone system. The technology has proven to be effective in fighting terrorism and in fighting crime. Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police has been using this so-called Stingray technology, too. The problem is that the technology eavesdrops and sweeps up data from every cell phone it encounters, not just those of the bad guys, but from ordinary law-abiding citizens as well. And that raises a host of privacy issues and some legal ones as well. We're going to look into those issues and give you a kind of primer on how this all works this hour, because I'm certain that my explanation was completely incorrect, but we're going to find out. Fred Clayson Kelly is an investigative reporter for the Charlotte Observer who has been following the story of this technology's use by CMPD since the story broke. Welcome to the program. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me again.
Nice to have you here. A little later in the show, we'll hear from an attorney from the American Civil Liberties Union and their Speech, Privacy, and Technology Project. And I want to point out that we also invited representatives from CMPD to be with us and were told that they would not be able to assist us. Those are their words. Our invitation to attorneys who represent CMPD was also declined. Well, when did the Observer find out about this practice? Because this has been pretty secret around the country.
Ironically, we found out by accident. An editor thought it was important that we be represented at sort of a constitutional rights conference at UNC Charlotte. And it just so happened that a student who attended asked one of the panelists, who happened to be a CMPD detective, a question. And he asked about cell phone surveillance and stingrays.
How did the student know about that?
That is a great mystery.
All right.
I will say that the student seemed to know an awful lot, according to the editor. And the panelists kind of stammered and hesitated before the detective said, "Okay, I'll tell you." And he gave them a brief summary of how the technology works. And the conversation moved on, but the editor made a mental note and wrote down what he heard once he got back to the office. And at that point, we started making information requests to the city. And in about, I'd say 5 weeks, we had a story in the paper.
You wrote in October that CMPD has been using this technology for 8 years. Wow. And that predates the extra equipment that they were able to buy because of money donated to them from other outside sources for the Democratic National Convention in 2012. Why did they feel it was necessary to buy this piece of equipment and use this piece of equipment 8 years ago?
There were a couple of things happening. Sort of in the post 9/11 world, the federal government had moved to provide money for local police departments to buy this type of equipment to help root out terrorism. Mm-hmm. So the city of Charlotte was able to obtain federal money to buy this type of surveillance equipment. As we know from reporting that we've seen in the Charlotte Observer, that was also about the time that the FBI started on the trail of a guy named Shamir Khan, who was a local person who went to Central Piedmont Community College and later became radicalized and was killed overseas by drone. And so there was a sense that this type of equipment was needed. Later, the department thought that equipment became outdated. They looked for an update. This just happened to come months before the DNC came to Charlotte. And so I think those were the major impetuses. We've seen in the paperwork, even when they thought their equipment had been outdated, it seemed to indicate that they were borrowing this type of equipment from somewhere else. So they obviously viewed it as an effective tool.
This equipment goes by various names: Stingray, Hailstorm, Amberjack, Triggerfish. Are they all about the same, these different technologies? Are these just brand names?
They're brand names that are mostly associated with a Florida company, the Harris Corporation. Some of them describe...
Is the Harris Corporation the same corporation that makes radio transmitters? Do you know?
That I do not know.
Okay, all right.
What it is, for example, some of the – there's not a lot known about them. And so there is a certain amount of guesswork from civil libertarians and others who follow this stuff. Some of it describes the whole unit. Some of it describes parts. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the Amberjack is a part of a stingray that helps amplify the sound of the signal that police are tracing as they use the equipment. The Hailstorm is sort of the updated version of the stingray. It's the latest and greatest thing.
Hmm. It all sounds very I don't even know the word to use, but it's all marketing. This has been used. This technology has been used by federal agencies since the 1990s. Who knew? To hunt down terrorists. Was that fact generally well known when your report came out, or did your report kind of reveal that the government, the federal government, has been using this for so long?
Well, there are people, civil libertarians, and people in the tech world who have sort of known about this this type of capability for a long time, but it was not broadly known that local police were using it until 2011. There was a case of a man out in California who was brought out on federal charges, tax charges, and he was some sort of technical whiz, even though he was not highly educated. He somehow had figured out that police shouldn't have caught him the way they caught him. And he started raising questions during his court hearing in which he represented himself, in which he demanded to know how police got onto him, because he figured in his mind they should have never done it. And it was only in those court proceedings that it became widely known that local police had this technology that could penetrate through walls to trace phone signals.
And we're going to talk a lot about that aspect of this in the next segment when we're joined by the ACLU attorney, because this is where people really get upset with this, and the fact that evidently this technology had probably been used in trials unbeknownst to the judge and unbeknownst to the defense attorney and to the client. And there's some question about whether that's legal or constitutional, I suppose. How effective, since the government, the federal government, has been using this technology since the 1990s, do we have any idea how effective it has been in keeping track of, tracking down terrorists, preventing them from doing anything bad?
We have absolutely no idea. That's because the FBI, the federal government, and local police departments have moved to try to keep the presence of the technology a secret. There's been very little transparency with regards to these. We know in Charlotte, because we were able to obtain the court orders recently and have them unsealed, that there have been some high-profile cases where this technology has helped police break the case open. But we don't really know how they used it. Mm-hmm. If the information they gleaned from the machine was the key impetus in solving the case, we don't know much at all.
When did this technology on the local level, at least, because it initially came here to help fight terrorism, to search for terrorist activity and follow it and prevent it from happening, but then it transitioned into a crime-fighting tool. Do we know when that happened? Do we know when the CMPD and other police departments around the country began to use it for local crime-fighting?
The answer to that is no. We don't know.
Is that because you've asked the question and they won't answer it, or because you haven't answered
the question? That's exactly the reason. We've asked the question of CMPD. Other publications across the country have asked the question, and they've heard nothing but silence. It's been mostly crickets. We do know that departments have used these in pretty low bore cases. They're not terrorism cases. They've used them, of course, in homicides and some big cases, but If you look through the court orders, there was one where like a cell phone was lost at the airport and CMPD used the equipment to find the cell phone. No one knows the answer to this. In fact, the ACLU has documented, you know, a case down in Florida where the local authorities were hiding the fact that they were using this equipment in cases, and they were basically giving officers orders to not reveal it in court records. They were saying, call it something else, call it a confidential informant, but don't ever, ever, ever say Stingray.
So let's talk about how this works, because I'm sure that what I said at the beginning is a little off base, because I'm not sure. I don't know how it works, but maybe you do. So first of all, how big is this device? Is it bigger than a suitcase, bigger than a bread box? Does it take a vehicle? How big is it?
Well, let me preface it by saying I know some things about it, but not everything. And I think I got a lot of company in that. I will say that we've been told it is about the size of a box of donuts.
It's convenient.
I didn't even get that one. So it's not very big. It's mobile. We told it's something that the officers can put in a van or a car and drive around with. We're told what they do is once they get some information on a phone and they want to find that phone, once they have like an electronic digital number for that phone, they will drive out to a specific area near a cell phone tower and sort of drive in a tighter and tighter circle until that signal in the Stingray gets stronger and stronger. There is information that the Stingray is so precise that it can bring the authorities within 2 meters of the phone.
So, is it just detecting the digital signature of the telephone? And by that, I mean either the telephone number of the phone or the serial number of the phone, because every phone has some kind of an identification number for the cell phone tower to be able to locate it and transmit the right signal to and from it. Is it just doing that, or is it actually gathering up texts, emails that might be sent from that phone or received by that phone, and phone calls that are being transmitted by that phone? What's it exactly doing?
So this is a matter of great discussion and debate here locally. What we've been told by technologists and other experts is that you can buy equipment for your Stingray that will allow you to capture content, emails, text, and voice. What we've been told.
Did we buy that equipment?
Now, we've been told by Charlotte Police Chief Rodney Monroe that their equipment does not have the capability to capture voice content. And he was very strong in saying, we're not interested in that. We don't do it.
So they're just trying to find – they're just trying to locate a telephone? To what end?
They're trying to locate suspects. They can locate a suspect by using the presence of a cell phone.
Does the phone have to be in use?
We are told that the equipment doesn't work if the phone is turned off.
Okay, but it doesn't have to be used. It just has to be
in
your pocket.
No, it just has to be in your pocket and on, and they can track you.
City Manager Ron Carley, in defending CMPD's use of this technology, said that officers do not eavesdrop on conversations or store data from innocent people.
That is what he said, but you have to bring us the proof. We've asked for it. There's been a certain level of transparency on the part of the city and CMPD, which we appreciate. But part of the reason there's a lot of suspicion and skepticism about this technology is the lack of transparency. The police are essentially asking the public, the press, and anybody else to just trust us.
And they also say they don't store the data that is retrieved. I want to talk about that when we come back, because if they're just finding the cell phone, what data are they retrieving? We have to take a break. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and AeroChem Incorporated, the family-owned chemical blender providing chemical solutions to local industry for over 30 years. Information on their product line and contract services at AeroChem.com. And Nexen Pruitt, lawyers helping companies meet business challenges in court with regulators and at the deal table with offices in Charlotte and 7 other Carolina locations. Next challenge, next level, Nexen Pruitt. The investment returns of Bernie Madoff's clients, the ones that they were receiving, were too good to be true because They actually were too good to be true. He was running a Ponzi scheme, and he is not alone in this state alone, this year alone. I think they've gone after 16 or 15 of these Ponzi schemes, and the number continues to rise. We look at this tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, oil prices have fallen 40% since their peak in mid-June. What the drop means for the U.S. economy, oil and gas companies, and geopolitics.
You're invited to join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Stingray. That's a technology that evidently has been in use for about 8 years in Charlotte, deployed by the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department, but they are not alone. This is happening around the country by police departments, and the federal government has been using technology similar to this, probably more advanced, since the 1990s, to fight terrorism. When it's gotten into the hands of local police, it started as a terrorism-fighting device, but now it's moved into crime-fighting, and that's raised a host of issues because of the secrecy, the lack of transparency surrounding all this. We've been talking about this with Fred Clayson Kelly, who's an investigative reporter for the Charlotte Observer, who began writing about this story almost from the moment the Observer found out about it, which was not too long ago. If you heard the beginning of our conversation, they found out about this by surprise in a meeting with students, right, at UNC Charlotte?
At a conference on constitutional rights.
Okay. And the student happened to know a lot about this for some reason, asked a question of a police officer who was a little confounded by the question but gave an answer which triggered this series of articles. We're going to talk to an attorney with the ACLU in a moment about this. We were talking just prior to the break that City Manager Ron Carley says they don't eavesdrop, the police does not eavesdrop on conversations or store data from innocent people. And you have said that although how this is used is a little misty, the police have said that they only use it to track the location of a cell phone. But they also say they don't store the data that is retrieved. What kind of data is retrieved if they're just looking for the phone?
That is a very good question. Again, in a situation where they've asked us just to sort of trust them. What we've been told about the equipment is that it does collect information from all the phones in a given area. Mm-hmm. No one seems to be certain just how big an area that is. We've asked them, they said they don't store the data, and we've asked, well, what happens to it? And I have not gotten what I would consider a very clear answer.
What I read says it allows for the collection of serial numbers of phones, laptops, and tablets that collect to a cell network. Can it also pick up similar information from these devices when they're connected to a public Wi-Fi or even a private Wi-Fi network? Or do
they
know?
What I know is that they have to connect to a cell tower. That's the only way it works.
Okay.
If it doesn't connect to a cell tower, I don't think they can.
Do we know how often this technology is being used here?
CMPD has told us that they use it on a weekly basis. We've asked where because we wanted to know if it was in Dilworth or Myers Park or some other part of town, and they have flat refused to tell us where.
And do we know if this technology is generally available to officers in patrol cars, or is it accessed by only a select few within the department?
They did send some officers to Florida for training on how to use the equipment. My guess is that those would be the officers who would use the equipment.
We're going to get into some privacy issues about all of this as we go through the hour. And we have a question for those of you who follow us on Twitter. If this technology leads to a safer city and catching criminals, are you comfortable with law enforcement using cell phone tracking devices, even if it means picking up data from private law-abiding citizens? You can let us know your thoughts on Twitter at WFAE. As you might imagine, the privacy and legal concerns raised by this technology and its use in the field has caught the attention of the American Civil Liberties Union. And to get their perspective, we're joined now by Nate Wessler. He's a staff attorney with the ACLU's Speech, Privacy, and Technology Project. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Privacy groups say that this kind of surveillance is so intrusive, it violates the Constitution's prohibition against unreasonable search and seizure. Before we talk about that, doesn't it also violate provisions in the law that call for the use of warrants to wiretap a phone conversation?
It absolutely requires a warrant. And, you know, there are a number of troublesome things that have come out through the Charlotte Observer's reporting about the Charlotte-Mecklenburg police. And one of the most troubling is that every time they have gone to judges in the last several years, all 500 times that they've sought authorization to use these invasive stingray devices, they've done so without getting a warrant. They try to get an order on a much lower standard just by showing relevance to their investigation, which is far away from the probable cause that our Constitution and state law requires in order to get a warrant. You know, and that probable cause requirement has been in place since the drafting of the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, since our founding.
But do you need I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, in order to prevent unreasonable searches and searches that capture innocent people's information.
But do you need a warrant to tap a cell phone or to listen in on a cell phone conversation versus a wired landline telephone?
Yes, you absolutely do. Okay. And, you know, Supreme Court precedent has been clear that the contents of our phone calls are constitutionally protected and require a warrant. Now, I just want to be clear, you know, we know that at least some of the devices owned by the federal government have the capability to wiretap, to listen in on the contents of cell phone calls. We haven't seen evidence that the Charlotte Police Department is actually listening to the content of the calls, but we certainly know that they are locating phones with great precision, sending signals through the walls of private homes, and engaging in other troublesome activities.
If it were just capturing the location of a phone, not capturing any of the data, no conversation, no email, no text messages whatsoever, just the location of the phone, would that still be a problem for ACLU?
It would. You know, at the very least, that kind of precise location tracking requires a warrant. And that's because, you know, knowing where we go with our phones, and in this day and age, people bring their phones with them virtually everywhere they go, knowing that information can reveal some of the most private parts of our life.
Yes, but so can but Google knows where we are. If you're an Android phone owner, they know where you are. If you have the location services turned on, or if you want to use the phone up to its full potential, your automobile, if it has a GPS in it, knows where you've been and where you're going. What's the difference?
Well, one key difference is that you can turn off the location services on your smartphone to keep Google or Apple from knowing where you are. You can turn off your GPS in your car. What you cannot turn off is the capacity of your cell phone to talk to the cell phone towers, unless you power down the phone totally, but then that defeats the whole purpose of owning a phone. Unless you do that, then law enforcement with one of these devices can figure out where you are to a very precise degree.
We've had this discussion at the newspaper also, and The one of the differences we've discussed is that when you buy a GPS and you know it stores data, you sort of agree to it. I have no idea. I live down South Triantry. I have no idea when police are using this technology, and I certainly didn't get a vote, and I didn't even know about it for 8 years. I lived here and they had it.
But explain to me this, because quite often and for years, police departments have followed people. They've used detectives to actually follow people down the sidewalk, follow their cars around because they're suspected of suspicious activity. What's the difference in following a human being, one human being following another, versus using a device to locate their cell phone? What's the difference?
You know, one difference is that when police have these kinds of very powerful technological tools, it makes it incredibly easy for them to follow people, follow a large number of people, and follow them for large periods of time. 2 years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court, decided a case about whether police needed a warrant to put a GPS tracker on someone's car without their knowledge or consent. And justices on the court explained that, you know, back at the country's founding and in the earlier years when you would have a police officer trying to physically follow somebody, there were real constraints on how long that could happen, constraints based on the resources and the shift time and the amount of time a police officer could actually do that. With this technology, it becomes trivially easy. to do it on a large scale. And that's when we really need robust protections to make sure that overbroad surveillance isn't happening.
I want to make clear that we invited members of the CMPD to join us today, and we're told that they would not be able to assist us, and our invitation to attorneys who represent the police department also was declined. So we're not picking on the police without offering them an opportunity to answer our questions, but as our conversation with Fred Clayson Kelly from The Observer will tell you, they're not very forthcoming about this, and there are reasons for that, which we will get into. Nate Wessler, how is the mere act of one of the Fourth Amendment concerns surrounding this technology involves its ability to penetrate walls. You have used that term. We now have drones with heat signature detection that can penetrate walls, see where people are within a structure, even identify the gender of that person, and perhaps even the height of that person. How is that different from penetrating a wall to locate a telephone?
You know, it really isn't different. For as long as we've had a constitution, it's been clear that when police want to enter into somebody's private home or other private spaces like their office, they need to go to a judge and demonstrate probable cause and get a warrant. The Supreme Court in recent years has explained in no uncertain terms that that same rule applies when police are using technology to see through the walls of a house from outside. They've said that about heat-seeking cameras that allow you to see inside a house. They've said it about electronic tracking of rudimentary beeper devices. Mm-hmm. And the same rule applies when you're tracking a cell phone. You know, knowing where a cell phone is usually tells you where a person is. And if you can't see that from outside with your bare eyes, that's private information that requires a warrant.
Law enforcement has been given great latitude in the war on terror. It's almost as though we threw out the rule book. We've thrown out the Constitution to protect us, to protect ourselves from terrorists. But when you start using the same technology that we ignore the legal ramifications of in the fight on terror, and you start using it for crime fighting, does that change the equation, or are you against all of this under any circumstances?
Well, no matter what the justification is that police are using, they need to go through the right legal process. At a minimum, they need to get a warrant from a judge and explain to the judge what they're going to do. But, you know, another thing has become absolutely clear, as you were discussing earlier. You know, although many law enforcement agencies try to justify their purchases of stingrays based on counterterrorism concerns, we have seen zero evidence anywhere in the country that any local police department has ever used these devices for counterterrorism. That's certainly true in Charlotte, where, you know, in 2012, when they purchased a new device, it was the Vice and Narcotics Division that made that purchase. We've seen elsewhere in the country, for example, in Tacoma, Washington, where they explained to their city council that they wanted a stingray to detect improvised explosive devices, IEDs. But then in all 179 times they used that device since 2009, mm-hmm. it was for regular law enforcement investigations, mostly drug investigations.
How many police departments across the country have this technology and use this technology? Do we know?
Well, we know a little bit. The ACLU has identified 47 law enforcement agencies spread out across 19 different states in the District of Columbia that we know have purchased their own devices. Now, the secrecy surrounding Stingray technology is pretty extreme, and so we are sure that there are more agencies that have done this, and we just haven't seen the evidence. And then also there are a number of law enforcement agencies at the state and local level that are borrowing Stingray devices from federal law enforcement, from state police, and from neighboring jurisdictions. So it's quite widespread.
If my understanding of this is correct, until the press got wind of this technology and its use by police departments here and around the country, it's been very, very quiet. It's been a closely held secret, and maybe intentionally, but maybe not intentionally. Was it intentionally kept secret?
Well, there's no doubt. Go ahead.
Well, it was intentional, and as Fred was saying earlier, you know, for example, the ACLU down in Florida uncovered internal emails from the Sarasota Police Department showing that it has been their official policy to conceal this information even from judges. They've been referring to evidence gained with a stingray as evidence from a confidential source. You know, no judge or defense attorney would ever think that referring to a confidential source actually means a highly technical, invasive piece of surveillance gear.
That raises whole other questions. I mean, if you're using information that is obtained through a device that may or may not be legally being used or constitutionally being used, and the judge isn't aware of it and the defense isn't aware of it and it's not allowed to be brought up in discovery in a criminal trial, what are the implications of that?
Well, that kind of extreme secrecy just breeds complete impunity for law enforcement. You know, in our constitutional system, we rely on judges getting the right facts and clear arguments from both sides of the criminal justice process, from prosecutors and from defense attorneys. But when none of that information is revealed, there can be no oversight from judges.
I don't know, Fred, if you looked into this aspect of it here in Charlotte, but do you know if the police have used this to put away people who have broken the law, and whether or not judges and defense attorneys were aware that they used this technology to acquire the evidence?
All right. So let me first say that one of the things that CMPD has used in its defense of the technology since this issue arose is that they get approval from the courts. But people need to realize that it's an ex parte proceeding in which the judge only hears the police side. There's no defense attorney there saying, no, you can't, don't use this surveillance. And so the judge is the only counterbalance to the police argument. And what we've seen and the judges that we've talked to is that they did not have a great understanding of the technology. Some of them sort of, you know, once the interview is over, would ask, well, what does it look like? Or ask some of the questions that you're asking me here today. And so my guess would be that they didn't have a great deal of knowledge. As we know from our reporting that from 2006 to 2010, they didn't even keep records on file at the courthouse. And the other thing is that the orders that the CMPD apply for, they're broad. They give them options to do a number of things in terms of cell phone surveillance. So they could choose to use the Stingray, or they could choose to go another way. So the judge wouldn't know in a particular case what option they were choosing.
So the public didn't know this technology existed. Sometimes in some jurisdictions, the judges didn't know. The defense attorneys didn't know. Defendants in criminal trials didn't know. Did city officials, who in some cases helped provide the funding for this, did they know?
No.
Well, that you, because you wrote in The Observer that local and state leaders were surprised that CMPD captured phone data from innocent people. How could they not have known that?
Well, when we do stories like these, you know, the editors come to me and they say, we need to call every city council member we can reach and ask them about this. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that everyone I reached heard what I said, hesitated, and were like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Is that because they've been sworn to secrecy or because they didn't know?
They didn't know. A couple of them had some idea of the issues at stake, but to a person, they all had to say, Fred, I need to get some information and call you back. And then when they called back, they still didn't know.
I'm confused because the Charlotte City Council voted unanimously and without debate to spend $357,000 to upgrade cell phone surveillance technology for the police department in 2012. I want to come back to that because we have to take a break and find out how they could vote on that unanimously and without debate and not know anything about it. It's a mystery, which we'll solve in the next segment. We're talking about the Stingray technology that allows police departments to track cell phones, and we'll continue in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Parsec Financial, wealth management based on active listening and diligent research. Details at parsecfinancial.com or by phone at 704-334-0894. And Talk It Out NC, a resource for North Carolina parents who want to understand and deal with the dangers of underage drinking. TalkItOutNC.org. Oil prices have fallen 40% since their peak in mid-June. What the drop means for the U.S. economy, for oil and gas companies, and geopolitics, the topic of the conversation in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. And if you'd like to be part of our conversation, CharlotteTalks at WFAE.org will get you to us, or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
I'm Melissa Block, host of All Things Considered. Find out not only what happened during the day, but why and what happens next by tuning into All Things Considered weekdays from 4 to 6:30 p.m. on WFAE.
There's countries like Saudi Arabia, which, by the way, has the fourth largest defense budget in the world. They're going to have to step up to the plate and take the leadership in fighting ISIS.
All Things Considered on WFAE weekdays from 4 to 6:30 p.m., your front row seat behind the headlines.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking to Nate Wessler, staff attorney for the ACLU's Speech, Privacy, and Tech Project, Technology Project, and Fred Clayson Kelly, an investigative reporter for the Charlotte Observer who broke the story and has been reporting on the story of the fact that Charlotte-Mecklenburg police for 8 years have been using this Stingray technology that allows them to track cell phones, what they do with the data, what data they collect. And they collect a broad stream of data from phones that are owned by law-abiding citizens in addition to phones that are owned by potential criminals, alleged criminals. What they do with that data and what data they collect is pretty much a secret. We invited representatives from CMPD to be with us. We were told that they would not be able to assist us, their words, and our invitation to attorneys who represent CMPD also declined. Before I go back to Nate, the City Council, we were talking about how the City Council didn't know anything about this, or they'd have to find out more information, but they voted in 2012 to spend $357,000. They voted unanimously and without debate to upgrade cell phone surveillance technology for the police department. They knew nothing about the data collection process when they voted on that funding? They knew nothing?
That is what they have told us. Let me just say something, not to make an excuse for them, but before these city council meetings, they get dozens and dozens of reports, reams of paper, and the most routine items, the items where officials think they will not have a lot of disagreement, go into something called the consent agenda. And there may be a dozen or two dozen items in which there is one vote taken that covers a bunch of these items. The purchase to update the surveillance equipment was put on this consent agenda. So there was no debate. Procedurally, there was no debate because somebody said, I vote to put this item into the consent agenda, along with all the other ones. And so there was no real chance for them to
question. Was that deliberate to cut off debate, do you think?
You would have to ask them. I don't know. I do know that the police would not be very eager to have this type of surveillance discussed in an open meeting.
Some of those same council members said they did not remember voting to fund the technology, and that's probably why. And one councilwoman, Claire Fallon, said, according to an article I believe you wrote, the bad thing is we're losing so many of our rights. This country is founded on freedom and the right to privacy. We're doing a lot of this under the premise of safety. I don't know if it's done any good. Let's parse that. First, was this country founded on the right to privacy? Nate?
Well, it absolutely was. I mean, one of the main reasons for the American Revolution were the warrantless, overbroad searches by the Crown's officials. When the founders of this country wrote and ratified the Fourth Amendment, they were concerned with limiting overbroad, unreasonable police searches and with making sure the police went to a judge and demonstrated probable cause as to a particular suspect and got a warrant that limited their discretion.
Would the right to privacy extend to police departments not being willing to disclose the existence of this technology or how it's being used?
No, the secrecy claims that have been made by police departments, including in Charlotte, but also many other places around the country, are just incredibly overbroad. You know, I can understand if there's an active investigation when police are, you know, in the middle of tracking down a suspect and they've gotten a warrant, that they may want to keep some details of that investigation secret until it's over. That could be reasonable. But trying to keep secret information about their policies, about how they use this kind of invasive technology, about the past cases where they've used it, about what legal safeguards they get, there's just no justification for keeping that secret from the public.
I'm going to come back to this lack of transparency, but let's go back to the second part of Claire Fallon's comment about whether she didn't know whether this kind of technology or some of the things that we've been doing in recent years is doing any good. Is there any way to tell if this kind of surveillance has done any good, either to fight terrorism or to fight crime?
Well, you know, I am sure that police in Charlotte and in the other cities in North Carolina where police have bought these devices, I'm sure that using stingrays has helped them track down some people, maybe gather evidence for crimes. But what's so important is that they are going to judges and going through the right legal process before they do that. And you know, the Fourth Amendment, when it was put into place by this country's founders, they were very clear that sometimes it would make law enforcement's job a little harder. In fact, that's the entire point of those privacy protections. So it's important that police aren't taking shortcuts just because they think it's expedient for them.
You wrote an article, I believe it was an article that you wrote, in which you asked, why is the government trying so hard to hide records from the public? Did you reach a conclusion?
You know, it's hard to know. The only thing I can conclude is that they are trying to avoid oversight by judges and by members of the public. You know, it's pretty convenient to conduct this kind of surveillance when nobody's watching and nobody's asking questions. Once members of the public and legislators and judges start asking the hard questions and trying to impose some reasonable limits, it might make things a little more complicated for police, but that's as it should be.
Well, I was going to ask you, some municipalities are now requiring police to get warrants or follow other rules if they want to use this technology to gather cell phone data. And in those cases, are they as effective in stopping crime when they have to stop, go to a judge, ask for a warrant, et cetera?
You know, we're just starting to see information trickling out of some municipalities that have started to change their rules. So it's early to say with any examples, but what we do know is that for hundreds of years, police have conducted investigations perfectly effectively by getting warrants when they want to search the inside of my house.
But the argument is that technology has made the world go much, much faster, and that traditional laws and the deliberative democracy that we have here and the rule of law that we have here is too slow to keep up.
Now that is a slippery slope that'll take us, at its conclusion, to a world where police can search all of our digital data on all of our personal devices at their whim without ever going to a judge. You know, in fact, the proliferation of digital information and of cell phones and laptops and other devices has created a treasure trove of information for police. You know, they have access to far more information in their investigations than they ever did before. And that's why it's so much more important to have a warrant requirement and oversight from judges and elected officials.
But that leads to this. I mean, we live in a world where increasingly privacy seems to be disappearing, and much of that is because we're giving away information willingly to participate in this digital world. We give it away on Facebook. We give it away on our cell phones. We give it away in unencrypted emails. So in that world in which we now live and in which we voluntarily fork over tons of information that heretofore was private, should we anticipate having any privacy whatsoever?
We absolutely should. It is true that in the modern economy and a modern society, it's basically impossible to take part without using digital services where we have to share some information. But that should not mean that by virtue of sharing information with Google or Facebook, we have given that information up to the police for them to freely take without getting a warrant. You know, for all of our history, we have given our private letters to the Postal Service to transmit, but that has never meant that police could open those letters without getting a warrant. You know, new technology does not mean we have to give up on the old rules that have always worked.
There will be a lot of people who are listening to this who will say, I don't care if they hear my conversation or collect my texts or my emails or know where my phone is or what my phone or my laptop or my tablet's serial number is. I'm not doing anything wrong, but if it helps protect me against the bad guys, have at it.
And we hear that a ton at the newspaper. We've gotten emails about this and letters, and I always have one name for them, Martin Luther King. This guy was followed by the FBI. He was hounded by the government for trying to bring civil rights and things that we all agree with now to this country. You could argue that he wasn't doing anything wrong either, but he paid a price for government surveillance.
Let me share with you some things that have come across on emails and Facebook and Twitter while we've been talking. Steve emails, I've been upset about this from the start. I emailed all city council members, the mayor, the mayor pro tem, and Ron Carley. Few responses. Mr. Carley assured me that this was approved publicly and gave me the date City Council approved its purchase and its use. I looked at the video for that day, and it was rammed through with no discussion. We've also already talked about that. With no mention of the device's name or use, if it hadn't been for the Observer, we would not be having this conversation today. Steve, the paper thanks you for justifying their continued existence.
Keep reading.
That's right. Keep reading. Tom in York, South Carolina, if this equipment is manufactured in Florida, who can buy it? Could I buy it? Can a private citizen buy this if you have the money?
My understanding is you have to get special permission from the federal government, I believe the FCC, because it's only manufactured sold by the Harris Corp here in the United States, and it isn't just given out.
You know, we hear so often that certain drugs are not, for certain diseases, are not manufactured because there's not enough people who suffer from those diseases to justify the research and development of a drug. How many of these devices can they sell? I mean, isn't there a limited supply? If you only limit it to federal governments and local police, why is it worth Harris's research and development to make this technology?
Well, it's a giant company that's one of the largest government contractors.
Pharmaceutical companies are the biggest companies in the world.
Correct. And there are a lot of police departments in the United States. There's a lot of localities. And if you can sell a number of them to them, I imagine you can make a fair amount of money.
Peter in Lenore says the assertion that police don't use this technology on innocent people is self-contradictory. If a person is considered innocent until proven guilty, yet this technology provides evidence to prove that guilt, then they only use this technology on innocent people. They have not denied storing data, just not on innocent people. This is an intentional misdirection since police are not allowed to investigate unless they suspect the person. Police are not allowed to arrest anyone they believe innocent, so police have already made their own judgment of guilt and innocence, which the courts may later on rule on. This is an intentional ambiguity based on the difference between a legal definition of guilt and a police procedural definition of it. Well, that requires Nate to get in here on this conversation.
Well, you know, that's why the warrant requirement is so important. It's to, you know, to put a judge in between the police and the population, and to make sure that police actually can demonstrate probable cause that a particular person committed or will commit a crime. You know, these devices raise privacy concerns, you know, about the person that police are trying to investigate, the actual suspect. But then there are also the hundreds or even thousands of completely innocent bystanders who are using their phones in the area, and those phones end up being forced to transmit their identifying information and their locations back to the police. That's a tremendous concern. Hmm.
Paul emails, several questions actually. Does the Charlotte Observer team know if, in addition to the use of Harris Corporation Stingray device, federal or local law enforcement authorities are also using planes equipped with devices known as dirt boxes, which I understand are manufactured by the Boeing company in order to mimic cell towers and acquire private cell phone data?
That I don't know.
Have you heard of this before?
I have.
Nate, what do you know about this?
Yeah, so we know that there are federal law enforcement agencies that are putting Stingray technology or similar devices made either by the Harris Corporation or by a subsidiary of Boeing on airplanes and flying them over metropolitan areas to try to locate suspects. And, of course, also in the process, sweeping in information about thousands, maybe tens of thousands of people who just happen to be nearby. We've not seen evidence that local police are doing that, but there's no reason to stop them aside from, you know, the practicalities of putting that device on a plane.
Ken on Facebook says it's not fundamentally different from wiretapping, so I don't have a problem with it, as long as they have to get a warrant first. That would be the ACLU's position as well, wouldn't it?
At a minimum, we think they need to get a warrant, although I will say that, you know, it's an unanswered question yet in the courts whether the dragnet quality of these searches, the sweeping up of all those innocent people's data, means that these searches could ever be reasonable under the Fourth Amendment. It's a concern of ours and one that we hope judges will start addressing soon.
Let me get back to one of Paul's extra questions here. Will the Charlotte Observer team be reporting in the future on the widespread use of by Charlotte Mecklenburg schools of equipment installed by Lobby Guard Solutions, which performs a criminal background check on all parents or guardians visiting the school through the use of facial recognition technology and driver's license information without first giving those parents or guardians any type of disclosure or privacy notice?
I can't give away specifics on the radio, but I can say that we are doing – we're looking into a number of things and a number of issues regarding surveillance by not only CMPD, but other local police departments and CMS police.
Okay. And finally, will the Charlotte Observer team be reporting in the future on the widespread use of license plate recognition cameras mounted on private and law enforcement vehicles, which photograph automobiles parked in local malls and other public places? I didn't know this happened.
Yeah, this is something that we're going to look into and has been looked into by USA Today, where, basically bill collectors have hired someone to drive around a mall parking lot and collect information on the license plates in an attempt to sort of repossess a car or something else. And so it's widespread, and there's evidence that, according to USA Today, that law enforcement and government folks have supported this type of effort.
Anthony writes, cell phones broadcast and receive digital radio signals. This device that the police uses can't be much more technical than my XM radio receiver. For someone with a cell phone to expect privacy is ludicrous. Wake up, world. Nate, the ACLU and others have commented on the need for the law to keep up with this technology. Do you see that happening?
The law is very slowly starting to keep up. You know, courts in a few parts of the country have started to address cell phone tracking. For example, the Florida Supreme Court just a couple months ago issued a ruling saying that police need to get a warrant when they want to track someone's cell phone in real time. About a dozen state legislatures across the country have put in similar rules by legislation. So we're getting there, but it's going slowly, and it really speaks to the need for legislators, including in North Carolina, and for judges to pay attention and make sure we don't lag too far behind.
Nate Wessler is staff attorney for the ACLU Speech Privacy and Technical Project. Fred Clayson Kelly has been following this developing story in the pages of the Charlotte Observer. He's an investigative reporter there. I want to mention that we invited members of CMPD to be with us. They were unable to be here, and our invitation to attorneys who represent CMPD also declined. Thank you both for the hour.